Does anyone really know what hormones do? Most women are left so confused about what this means for them. Let's leave behind the confusion as we head into the holiday season. An award-winning German nutrition scientist created a powerful herbal formula called Hormone Harmony. This combines 12 powerful adaptogens into one single capsule. Each one of these ingredients is carefully selected based on scientific evidence and has been proven effective in clinical studies for women of various ages and hormonal profiles. Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormone imbalances. The company surveyed 1,800 women to see how Hormone Harmony helped them, and the results are mind-blowing. 86% of women started losing weight, 77% say it improved their mood, and 100% said they're feeling like themselves again. Hormone Harmony has over 50,000 raving reviews from women all over the world, with 98% of them saying that they'd gladly recommend it to their friends and family. You can try Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your first order with code HOMEMAKERCHIC, all one word, at checkout.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight. Make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at WeightWatchers.com.
Welcome to Homemaker Chic Podcast. It is Monday. As usual, we're post-weekend recovery. It's like you wait for the weekends and then you have to kind of rally after them. But we're going to rally today, and we're going to rally really good. We have a surprise for you friends in just a few minutes, but we are here perfecting the art of homemaking. We're going to really look at the home today. We're doing it with a little Toops and Company makeup, some red lips. Shay has her groovy Norway sweater on. I have my groovy Crab Rave blouse on. Did your kids watch Crab Rave when that was popular?
No, they didn't.
Oh, that's too bad. You keep that card in your back pocket for when they're driving you nuts. If they need a dance party, you turn on Crab Rave on YouTube.
Okay, noted. Yeah,
super fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's February, so everyone's kind of driving everybody crazy.
Everyone's
gotten a bit grouchier, everybody in society. And I'm like, it's just February. Like, maybe let's just not talk till March. Maybe let's just do that.
Kind of like, you know, when you have PMS with your husband, maybe just be quiet.
Yeah, maybe everyone. Just don't.
Culturally, could we just shut up till we get to like the tulips?
Yep. I mean, there's been plenty of times where I've actually said to myself, like, you just need to go to bed. Like, nothing good is going to come out at this point. You just go put yourself to sleep, wake up again tomorrow, and just try again.
Yes. Like a three-year-old.
Like a three-year-old.
Know thyself for crying out loud.
Exactly. Yep. Big time. So, we're here.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited. So we have a surprise guest for you today. But before, I mean, like, the surprise guests of surprise guests, at least if you're Angela and I.
I'm sweating. I have mustache sweat, armpit sweat. My space heater's on again. I'm like, why did I do that?
Yeah. So I was explaining to Stu who we were going to be interviewing today, and of course, he knows of her because he's married to me. But I was like, this is like the epitome of you interviewing Stevie Ray Vaughan, who is, you know, famed blues guitar player. And I was like, if you were going to interview Stevie Ray, like your idol, you know, this is your hobby, playing guitars. Here's your idol, Stevie Ray. Like, what do you ask him? Like, what would you say? And he's just like, well, Stevie Ray's dead, so... Okay, well, if he was alive, what would you ask him?
I know, Joel, a few times he's like, now who is this again? Babe, the stack of books.
Get it together.
Good gracious. The ones where I close them and I go crazy and I start running around the house. That one.
Person. A little bit like that. But before we welcome on this special guest, we do want to give a shout out to Toops & Co., sponsor of season 10. You guys have heard us talk about them, but I'm full Toops today, feeling quite glamorous for our guest. Feeling quite toopy. Toops & Co., T-O-U-P-S www.homemakersandco.com. We want you to go there and we want you to shop their natural skincare and their natural makeup and their lipsticks and all their beautiful stuff. I've got the bronzer, I've got the blush, I've got the foundation and the concealer and the lipstick and the face primer and all that jazz. So thank you to Emily. Super clean, super luxurious skincare and makeup and the sponsor of season 10. So
yeah, let's. Very I just want to talk really quick about Mondays because, you know, the weekends can be full and sometimes you're not always as fresh as you want to be. This is my trick, the dry shampoo with the little fancy brush.
Yeah.
And you put it on at night.
Yes.
And then let it sit there and soak up all your nasties while you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can wake up fresh.
Yep. I have found the same thing. Dry shampoo at night.
Mm-hmm.
Works. It works better than dry shampoo in the morning.
Yeah. Then it does its job and you're not walking around looking like you suddenly turned gray. My kids are like, oh, so that's what you're going to look like when you're older.
That's nice. They're so nice.
Or if I stopped using hair color. One of the two.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's actually been quite liberating. Like, this is, I haven't colored in a long time. You can still see, like, my summer ends here because it bleaches out. My kids are like, why is it lighter on the bottom? I was like, well, that's what your hair, their hair is the same way. They just can't see it. That's what everybody's hair does in the summertime.
Hair. Yeah.
In fact, I saw this picture of my children the other day, and it was taken at the end of August, and they were bleach blonde, dark skin. They looked beautiful and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at them, and I'm like, what's wrong?
Victorian
what's
street
wrong
urchins.
What's wrong with you guys?
Like, pale.
You look terrible. I look terrible. They look dark circles under their eyes. Everyone just needs a little sunshine. We're
they
ready
do.
For it to come
you know, that
back.
First round in the garden where you come in and you're sun kissed and you go, Oh,
there she is.
That's what I've been missing. Where were you in January?
Yes, seriously.
Golly. Yeah. Well, I'm like hot to trot. So let's cue the wine music.
Okay, let's do it.
And
get on with it. Okay, so we encourage you, if you're listening to the podcast, it's Tuesday night, you're making dinner, pour a glass of dry farm wines, won't you? Stock your cupboard with these beautiful, organic, biodynamic, natural, sugar-free wines. I mean, these are as good as wine gets, frankly. And the fact that we can bring them into our kitchen for around $25, $26 a bottle is actually really amazing. So you guys have heard us talk about this on the podcast a lot. We really encourage you to consume better and not more.
Yes.
And so maybe your wine budget is $30 a month. Get you a good bottle and really, really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all your budget allows. I mean, we've definitely gone through times where there was no wine budget. So I understand that too. But we want you to visit dryfarmwines.com/homemakerschic. And use that link because when you do, you'll get a bottle for just a penny. With your first order, they'll throw in an extra bottle for just a penny. These are just such beautiful, beautiful, clean wines that really are alive. They're going to completely change your wine palate. What you think is really good wine is going to change. Mm-hmm. So prepare yourself.
Well, I think it really complements. A lot of our listeners are on, you know, they're on a food /health/enjoyment of life journey. And I hope, you know, we're an encouraging voice in that. And they're already, there's so many that are shifting their food palette even to try new things and to get healthier and grow more mm-hmm. of their own food. This just complements all of it. Just finishes the deal.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really
so,
does.
What did you guys enjoy this weekend?
Okay, so we're working on getting our tastes back from being sick.
Mm-hmm.
I never lost mine. Mine got like actually hyper. It went the other way. My smell and taste went bzoop, off the
charts.
You're
like pregnant?
You're like pregnant. Yeah. I'm like, does everyone smell that? What's going on? And so it took a little bit. You know, obviously we were sick, so we're not drinking wine while we're sick. So this was the first bottle that we opened post-sickness. And it's a Grunier Veltliner. And it's Lausanne Lem. I think it's called.
Hold it up. I've never seen that one.
Okay, so three of a kind. Matthias, Victoria, and Leonard, three siblings with a heart and love for wine, in harmony with nature, honest craftsmanship as a motto, pure and genuine into the bottle. So this is an Austrian white, It's just 12.5% alcohol, which is really the highest that you're going to see from dry farms because they don't add sugar, which means the yeast doesn't have as much sugar to eat, which means not as much alcohol is produced. Mm-hmm. When you see wines with 13, 14, 15%, the only way you get an alcohol level that high is by adding a bunch of sugar to the wine and giving the yeast essentially more food to eat. So tasting notes on this one, it's a heavy-bodied white. Obviously, Grenier Veltliner is the variety. Pink citrus, white and yellow flowers, lip-smacking acidity, fleshly orchard fruit. So there you go.
That sounds really good. You had me at pink citrus.
Yeah, seriously. Right? My favorite smell in the entire world. Mm-hmm. So I actually have a bottle of this that I had from before. I also haven't had it yet. So we opened this one. And I'm going to save the other one of the other bottle that I have of this for our Valentine's Day
dinner. Now that you know.
Cool. So we're going to be doing some seafood, and I figured what pairs better with seafood than a nice citrusy kind of tart white mm-hmm. wine. So, but really smooth, and like, it doesn't say this on the tasting notes, but like almost like a vanilla element. Have you had wines like white wines like that where it's almost like it's aged in like a bourbon barrel or something?
Okay.
There's some sort of sweet note to it. It's weird. Yeah. Maybe vanilla is the only word I can think to quote.
Okay, that sounds really good. Every time I see the wines like with the 15%, you know, I always think of, did you used to watch In Living Color?
No, just a little bit on the tail end.
A little bit young.
Yeah.
I can't remember which character it was, but it was a Jim Carrey character. I don't know if it was Fire Marshal Bill, which one of his characters, but he talked about tipping back on grandpa's cough syrup and... Mm-hmm. That's what I think of every time I see or taste thick. At this point.
Yeah. Pretty thick. Dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchic. There's a link below in the show notes if you want to give that a click, give them a try. Now is a great time of year. Get some beautiful rosés for spring. I was going to say something about that.
Okay.
Don't remember though. So there we go.
Okay. Well, you got me all jazzed. Let's talk about food on Thursday. Because that description of that wine bottle got me all excited.
Hot to trot?
Almost as excited as I am right now. I'm not kidding. Okay. My palms are sweating. So, she's in the waiting room.
Okay.
We're going to let her in.
Okay.
And just amaze all of you. We're so excited for you. We're so excited for us.
All right. Here we go.
So here she is, Homemaker Chic audience. We are introducing to you our new friend, Ross Byam Shaw. You have heard us just go gaga over her over and over again when we do episodes about our home, about cultivating our home and creating beautiful spaces. Shay, I don't know when we discovered her. I found Perfect French Country years ago. And then you said, you know, she has other books. And and now we're just keeping up with each new book that she brings us. But we are so thrilled to welcome you to the show, Roz. Just ecstatic.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah. It's always amazing to me. And maybe you found this over the years. When you create a book, you actually do, you don't think about it necessarily when you're writing it, but you actually impact people's lives with that.
That's such a strange thought, isn't it? And I still feel really surprised and really touched and really delighted when someone says, you know, oh, I really enjoyed it, or I like this particular story, or I read your book, and so I decided to do this, or I decided to do that. It isn't at all how you feel about it when you're writing it, not at all. I'm just, in a way, I'm just having a nice time, you know, meeting people I like, writing about houses I find really interesting and really inspiring. And there's quite a long gap between when you send off your last piece of copy and when you actually see the book as an object. Mm-hmm. And it's as soon as it's an object, it has become objectified. It's something that has a kind of life of its own. And I feel slightly disconnected from it at that stage. It's a strange thing. Have you done a book?
Yeah, I've done 3 or 4 at this point. And I always...
Of course you have. Of course you have. I know that. What a silly question. I know that.
It's like giving birth, but I'm like you. I'm like, once it's birthed creatively, I'm like, see ya. I'm uninterested now at this point.
It is odd, isn't it? You kind of move on. And
you do. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But I was thinking this morning. So the first book of yours that I started with, and maybe we should give listeners a big kind of overview of what books you've done, but I bought Perfect English Farmhouse when we moved into this house. So, or right before, so that was about 7 years ago, 6 years ago. And I was thinking actually the house that my children will grow up knowing and that the things that they will be familiar with or that will have that nostalgia for them, or that's because of this book. I mean, I have, its pages are worn. I have gone over and over and over it again and again and again and thought that's actually what we've created our home from. What an amazing thing that that is. Wow. And that work from you over there on the other side of the world is impacting children in Malaga, Washington.
You'll make me cry.
It's pretty amazing.
It's true. When that to our audience, if this is the first time you've met Roz, she's really branded this Perfect English style. I mean, it's in the introduction to your most recent book, you call it that it's sort of become this brand. Like you said, it's the books have become this thing of their own. And the reason Shay and I love this, Roz's words so much is I just feel like your words have put there, you've put down on paper what's been swirling around in my creative head for so many years. And then when I see it articulated and I see the photographs that are corresponding with your words, it's so encouraging to me in my own space. Perfect French Country. I'm going to show the audience this. You can see.
That's your soul personified, Angela.
Look at my bedroom wall color back there. Look at the cover of this book. I mean, it's just, I find myself, I'm so taken, like when I turn the pages and like you said, they're worn and they've really impacted my space. And, you know, I call my style old world, and I feel like what your books have done is just really, some of us appreciate permission to be what we are, who we are. It's sort of a permission slip. We tried to do that on the show to homemakers. Here's two people behind a microphone giving you permission to just love being home and love creating an atmosphere in your home, because that's not necessarily encouraged in the culture. And so I feel like in so many ways, your books just gave me this big written permission slip. Just go do your thing in your house. Just do it. And I love
that. Amazing. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever said anything quite so nice about them.
Really? They're referenced all the time.
That's a lovely thing to say. And, you know, if I felt I was any kind of, you know, accidental influence, I mean, it's very nice to hear you say that, because what you never want to do is set up a lot of unattainable fantasy interiors. And one of the things I've always really tried with the books to include places that are more accessible. You know, there are quite a lot of books out there and they show absolutely beautiful homes. And yes, you know, they're inspiring and they're wonderful and you gasp at their beauty, but they're really unattainable. And, you know, I'm very lucky now. I live in a really beautiful house. It is quite a big house. It's an old house. It's a lovely house. But all through my childhood, there was no money around, and it's taken a long time to get here. And I certainly absolutely remember what it's like not to have any spare money at all. And at that stage, everything I bought was from what we call a charity shop. I think you call them thrift stores. And actually, I still do that. You know, that's an old habit that just hasn't gone away. But it's very easy with things like Instagram, you know, glossy magazines, just to worry that actually what you're doing is just sort of inciting envy and making people feel inadequate. And I would feel really bad if I thought that's all I'd manage.
Well, let's expand on that, because, you know, our audience is homemakers. And some of them are in rental houses, some of them are in apartments, some of them live in the city, some of them live in the country. I mean, they span the globe. And I think this is what, this is genuinely the distinctive mark of your design books, is it's not perfect.
And like, no, it's not. So the name is really silly and sad.
I love it. Yeah.
But it is perfect. So I'm trying to think of which book it is, because I celebrate your entire catalog, but there's a really great one of an old wrought iron bed in a bedroom, second floor, I think. And the slope of the floor is so severe that one side of the bed is on the floor and one leg is up on like a 6-inch rock.
Yeah.
And not only is this not hidden, but it's actually highlighted. It's actually like kind of part of the point. Yeah. And you mention it in the words, like the slope of the floor, you know, you have to equal out the bed. And that is like what we really hope to convey to homemakers. So I would love to hear your thoughts on like, A, where did this like perfect house ideal come from? And then how can you sort of work, let's say, in a woman's mind as she is cultivating her home to celebrate those weird, quirky oddities of her home? A couple of things that come to mind, like the really small doors, you know, in a lot of the homes, or like the step up, the 4-inch step up into the other room, the ungrouted tile, the exposed wiring or piping, just all of those things that, you know, better homes and gardens would think of as, oh, we need to hide that, right? We need to like take this shot so it doesn't look like that. And what a disadvantage that is to homemakers who are actually just having to live in these houses.
Exactly. I don't know where the idea of the perfect home comes from. It's like the perfect body, the perfect hair, the perfect face. You know, we all have these things shoved in front of us all the time, don't we? And, you know, none of us are perfect. I think in this country, we're perhaps quite used to those sorts of imperfection because so much of our housing is old. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, the house you're talking about, I think is, if I remember rightly, it's a 17th century house, and the floor over the years has just sagged, you know. Mm-hmm. And in this house, I mean, I'm looking around now, I'm in the kitchen, and the pipe work hasn't been recessed. It's all surface mounted. And that's because, you know, when the house was built, there was no plumbing, there was no electricity. So when that stuff was added in, it was added on. And I think, in this country, we're perhaps slightly more used to working with that sort of imperfection, especially in an old house where you gain a lot of sort of character and interest and patina and wear, but you certainly probably don't get perfection. You don't get clean corners. You don't get totally flat walls. Mm. As for feeling better about it, I think, you know, a lot of us have had the experience of going somewhere where there really is perfection, whether that's really sort of beautiful monastic minimalism, which looks incredible in photographs, and actually, to me anyway, it feels quite uncomfortable to inhabit, because you kind of feel, you know, if a hair drops out onto the floor, it's going to ruin the look of it. You just feel like you're an imposition on the space. And I think I just like to be comfortable, basically. I like to be comfortable in my clothes. I like to be comfortable in my home. And I think I just elide the things that aren't perfect. I don't look at them. There's lots of other things to look at that I look at instead. And too much perfection really does make me feel uncomfortable, because I can't live up to that.
Well said.
Oh, I think, yeah, we're living in the wrong country, Shay.
I know we are. Here's an example of this. So I bought this thrifted chair, and it's tattered. I mean, it's probably from maybe the 50s or 60s, and its arms are all threadbare and kind of the stuffing's coming out. And I brought it home, and my dad said, "That is the ugliest chair that I've ever seen. Like, why would you buy that?" Yeah. But I put it by our fireplace and I drape a little throw over it. And I tell you what, that is everyone's favorite chair, because they do just feel like, I can sit in here, and maybe my clothes aren't perfectly clean, or maybe I want to tuck my feet up while I read, or whatever.
Exactly.
Great.
That's exactly it, isn't it? You know, you can live in the space, you can be yourself, you can scatter the newspapers around, you know, and it won't ruin the look of a room. Too much mm-hmm. perfection is just very demanding. Mm-hmm. And so I think some people love that, you know, and that's fine if you do. But for I don't, not for my own home. I need to mm-hmm. feel that I can, that I'm not going to worry if there's a tiny mark or a little tiny chip or it's not going to really upset me because it's not going to ruin the whole effect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Certainly not in my house.
Yes.
We have a trend here in the States. I don't know if it's in the UK and France, mm. but we have this white, they call it the white farmhouse trend. And yeah. everything is white. The floors, yeah. the walls, the furniture, everything. And I always joke, the minute a child walks in the back door and throws a red backpack on the floor, the look is ruined.
Yeah. Or a dog. You know,
a dog, anything. I
mean, how can you have a dog in a house like that? It does look beautiful. And actually, I've got a very good friend who has always lived like that. And she takes her shoes off and she pads around in bare feet. And that is how she feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. She works in a sort of very visual business and she likes the absolute calm of okay. everything being white. But she doesn't have children. Mm-hmm. She does have a cat, actually. And, you know, that's the way she's chosen to live. And I would never, you know, people like to live in such different ways. But certainly to me, a bit of wear and tear is, you know, is good. It's mm-hmm. good. Yeah.
I think that this I call them perfect imperfections. I think when you embrace those, especially somebody like I'm in a new home, this is the newest home I've ever lived in. The oldest home was right. about 1850. And okay. this was really traumatic to me. This house was built in 1984. Not what I wanted at all. Okay. But it was on property and they couldn't sell it. They couldn't get rid of it. And it was really suited for our family and the location. Okay. So yeah. that door opened wide up. And now I always say I'm trying to dial back the clock and deconstructing this home so that it looks old. But this embracing of perfect imperfections, I think for the American homeowner in new construction, it sort of takes the pressure off, like you said, to keep up with that competitive Instagram, everything is on point look.
Yeah.
When you can just embrace yeah. that there's some wonky areas or that door doesn't match or yeah. this room has mismatched baseboard compared to that room.
Yeah.
There's a lot of relief. And I think in that relief, then the creativity can happen. But when you're always obsessing about making it showroom worthy, it's so yeah. defeating.
Yeah, it is. 'Cause it's a hard thing to do. And it puts pressure on you, doesn't it? Which is, again, it's not very comfortable. I mean, I think I'm just naturally a bit of a scruffy person, quite honestly.
Right. I love that.
I've always been like that, you know. I've never been able to wear high-heeled shoes, even though you know they make your legs look better. Don't like the discomfort. Oh, good. I've never been able to wear really tight clothes. I just like being comfortable. And actually, I think there is a strand of English decoration that absolutely does put comfort very high on the list of what's important. And actually, classic English country house style is very comfortable to live with. You know, it is big, fat sofas. It is mm-hmm. thick, heavy curtains, drapes. Mm-hmm. It is carpets on the floor. It is a bit of a mix of stuff, you know, so you don't feel too constrained. You can mix different styles and different periods of stuff together. Mm-hmm. And it's physically, and to me anyway, visually comforting. I find that comfortable. Mm-hmm.
It's winter. We're getting organized. We're getting clean. We are washing our sheets from American Blossom Linens, softer with each washing. These are our favorite sheets here on the show. You know this as fans of vintage linens. These are the best sheets ever. Shay and I love to call them modern vintage, and you need to be sleeping on them with a process called combing. All the rough fibers are pulled through these American-made, Texas-grown cotton sheets. This creates the softest, most beautiful sheets for your home.
You will love them. I know you're in the mood to spruce things up. You want to make things fabulous for your home, beautiful. You want to survive winter in style. Do that with American Blossom Linens. Visit AmericanBlossomLinens.com and use this equally as beautiful coupon code HOMEMAKERCHIC20 for 20% off sheets, duvets, beautiful linens that I know you will love as much as Shay and I do. AmericanBlossomLinens.com. Use the coupon code HOMEMAKERCHIC20. A huge concept on this show is Better Not More, and our sponsor, House of Tokuman, exemplifies this idea. Visit hotrugs.net because I know you're tired of throwing your money away on cheap rugs that don't survive your lifestyle, and I know you want to dress your home in a hand-woven rug from House of Tokuman. These beautiful vintage rugs are known to outlast their plastic counterparts, you know, those washable rugs, by 2 decades. I know your washable rug hasn't held up the way you want it to. All of the House of Tokuman rugs are heirloom quality, they're handmade, and they are made from the finest cottons and sheep's wool. Buy directly from their website, always enjoy free shipping in the continental U.S., or enjoy a custom sourcing experience. I'll give you a little hint. Follow House of Tokuman over on Instagram for the most incredible education on rug quality, care, and sourcing. And then when you're ready, use this exclusive coupon code, HOMEMAKER25. For 25% off a beautiful investment into your home. You're guaranteed a one-of-a-kind rug, no fake antique rugs, no machine-made copies or replicas. You've seen them in our homes. Now it's time to dress your home in a rug. Visit House of Tokuman at hotrugs.net. That's hotrugs.net. And use the coupon code HOMEMAKER25. This is Angela. You've been following over on ParisianFarmGirl.com or maybe over on Parisian Farm Girl on Instagram. You've seen me redoing my home. You love the style, but you want to develop a little bit of your own style too. So here's what I think you should do. You need to visit oldworld.parisianfarmgirl.com and become a member of my Old World Design Society. As a member of the society, each quarter, I'm going to walk you through making your personal space even more beautiful with 3 private design classes. We have a design forum that is overflowing with ideas for your home and like-minded old souls just like you. And of course, a quarterly publication, print or digital, with no ads. The current magazine, Winter 2022, is so lovely, if I do say so myself, full of plenty of design inspiration and DIY projects to keep you busy until the tulips come up. So visit oldworld.parisianfarmgirl.com. Become a member of this special community of like-minded old souls. That's oldworld.parisienfarmgirl.com.
I think you see that throughout your books. You see these homeowners who, let's say, maybe have a traditional sort of British style, and then there's always a wild card in every room. It's like some giraffe figurine that they got
in the
when
kitchen
they were
or
on
something.
Their travels
yeah.
or yeah. You know, there's always some sort of little thing. I want to ask, did you have this kind of same style in your home when you have a daughter, correct?
I've got two daughters.
You have two. Okay. Did you have this same sort of style when you had children, or how was it different? How has it changed from having children to not having children?
I think the style is pretty much the same. I mean, when they were little, we lived in quite a modern house in London, but we had a lot of the same stuff. I mean, obviously when now I've got grandchildren who are toddlers and they come here and you do have to sort of do a sweep, you know, and move things up and maybe tuck up any cloth that's over a table so they're not going to pull it off and pull everything on the table off. But I have to say it was pretty similar. And actually, it's a good style for kids, because if there are toys on the floor or, you know, the sofa's all ruckled up or whatever, it's fine.
Or if they, you know, take a Sharpie to a sofa, it's like, well,
that's
it didn't match
so
any
fine.
Other thing.
No, that's not so
well, I had a child.
The line as yeah. a Sharpie on the sofa.
He went into the living room. He tied a Sharpie onto a string and he swung it around his head like this just to see what would happen. Well, what happened is the pen exploded.
Oh,
the
my
lid
goodness.
Came off, and it shot permanent ink all over. I mean, luckily, I mean, nothing was ruined. It's all a bit shabby anyway, comfy.
What color? And so,
it was black.
Oh, it was black.
Yeah, of course it was.
Of course it was.
But But one of the things I'm really thankful for is none of my furniture matches. None of it's part of a set. So if you ruin the love seat, not that that's what I want, but if it gets ruined, I don't have to go replace it all.
Yeah.
You just add a little piece here, add a little piece. And actually for our listeners, I think this is one of the hardest things for them to accept, that this isn't actually a style that you can just pull off in a weekend.
Right.
No, that's true. It's like layers.
Yeah. It's like, no, you actually have to love this. You don't just create it. It has to be, you know, if you're going to have books stacked on your coffee table, mine are all yours, by the way, and they haven't left in 5 years. Those are my only books I keep out, and Monty Don's. But if you're going to have books out, they're going to be the books that you actually read.
Yeah.
If you're going to have sofas and mismatched, they're going to be chairs you actually sit in. And that takes time.
It does. And also, I mean, for me, one of the keys is just to have things that you really love, and they may not match. But the nice thing about this sort of really quite relaxed informal style is that you can see something that, you know, doesn't match, that doesn't necessarily fit in, but that you just absolutely love, and you almost certainly will find somewhere you can put it. Mm-hmm. You can kind of mix things up. You're not constrained too much by what you buy. And I don't think I've ever decorated a room from scratch. Not really. You know, I've thought, well, what color should this be? But I mean, nearly all my curtains are secondhand, or, you know, my mum had them, or I think there's two pairs of curtains in this house that I literally chose and had made. All the others have come from various places. So I'm never really, I think I would find it really scary to create a whole decorative scheme. That's just never how I've done it. I've had to sort of work with what I've already got. And there is a certain amount of turnover. So, I mean, my poor husband, he's so tolerant, because actually he's an awful lot more minimalist than I am. So I have to promise him that when something new comes in, at least one thing will go out. And it doesn't always. But that's the sort of aim. But, you know, there is a little bit of turnover, but there's also a lot of stuff that we've had since we were first married, actually. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of accumulated. And, you know, as our homes have got bigger, especially since we moved out of London, it's filled up a bit more. But it's not, I don't think it's changed in essence terribly much.
Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite parts, is that it doesn't really go out of style. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think it does. I don't think it does. I mean, you can look, I was looking the other day at some pictures of the first flat we had, and it's really not so different in feel from, and that's 35 years ago or something.
Yeah, I think it is sad when you see these sort of modern homes being built, and they're built with a certain aesthetic in a certain period. And at least here we can date them, like, oh, I bet that house was built around 2010, or that house was built around 1999 or whatever. Yeah. And they have perfectly functional kitchens that are fine, but they'll rip them out and put it in a new kitchen. And this happens every about 15 years. People are putting $10,000 or $15,000 into redoing a kitchen because the tile's out of style. The flooring looks now tacky. You know, the high gloss brass faucets are now out, and then they're in. And then, man, that is so, wasteful in a way, but also just exhausting for the homemaker. You know, you're happy with your space for a couple years, and then you spend the next 5 years saving and dreaming of this new kitchen that you want, right? This new modern thing. And I think it's actually great news for the homemaker. You actually don't have to do that.
I totally agree. I think it's stressful, isn't it? You know, that thing of trying to keep up with fashion. And we are all affected by fashion to some extent. I think this is a reasonably timeless style. Mm-hmm. The kitchen thing, I mean, here there has definitely been a move towards the more unfitted kitchen, which is a more kind of flexible way of having a kitchen that you can take with you, bits of it you can take with you. But it's the waste that absolutely grieves me. I can't bear the idea of all that stuff just going probably into landfill. And that is another, for me, real selling point for this particular way of decorating, is it is a really, I think it is about as environmentally friendly as decorating can get, because you're reusing, you're upcycling, you're often using things that have been used for, you know, 100 years. The trees that they were made from were cut down 100 years ago. They were probably beautifully made with minimal machines. I like that. You know, I like that feeling that, and also that the things that you own and the chairs you sit on and the table you eat from, and maybe even the sofa you sit on, will be sat on and eaten from in 100 years' time. I think that's just, I love that feeling of continuity. I like the fact that it's not wasteful. I think it's very nice if you can afford it to buy things that are made by contemporary craftspeople. I mean, they tend, needless to say, to be quite expensive, probably more expensive than an equivalent antique, but because you're paying for that person's time as well as their skill, I think that's a really nice thing to do, because those are things that probably will also last. And, you know, there has to be a place for the sort of relatively cheap ready-made furniture, because that is, for a lot of people, you know, that is all they can afford. But even then, I sometimes think to myself, you know, if you just looked in a secondhand store or actually went to an auction, you could probably buy something that was better made or last longer and probably actually cost less.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I think too that, you know, in referencing the homemaker, when you do that, when you seek out, like you said, a thrift or charity shop or auction house piece, well, let's put it this way. If IKEA has its place, okay, it serves a need. It's fabulous. It's very useful. But it's not appreciating in value. None of those types of pieces or that style has any appreciation. And if you do go to the thrift shop and buy an antique, you know, hutch for your unfitted kitchen, most likely that's going to appreciate in value. Those pieces with the dovetail and the way they're made, they're never going to be worth nothing. Whereas an IKEA cabinet eventually will be worth absolutely nothing. So from the get-go, it's even a better investment as far as the home economy goes.
Yeah, I think there's some really strong arguments for it. I mean, that being said, I do have a whole wall of IKEA bookshelves in my study.
Right.
And they are great because under the weight of glossy magazines, they don't actually do that. They stay, you know, because they're made from MDF. So you're right, it has its place. But, you know, there are very strong arguments for buying secondhand, if you can. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not always easy to find the thing you need. It
takes a bit of effort.
Yes, yeah, it does. Yeah. We have a table in our kitchen, so we moved in and ripped all the nasty cabinets out. We had a turf grass carpet in our kitchen. So we ripped all that out, and and the kitchen sat, you know, it was kind of, the space was a little bit vacant for a while because we were looking for like a working table, just one people could actually sit around, but that also you could use for food prep or whatever. And it took like maybe 2.5 or 3 years for us to actually find this table, which is a barbaric length of time to wait when you really want a piece and you can see it in your head. But just last week I had my children in there. So this table is about a little over 200 years old. And we had to take a special trip to go get it, but I was teaching them how to oil it. And I was like, this piece has survived. Like, it is not going to die with us. Like, one of you
is going to inherit it and you're going to have to take care of it. Like, I think in some ways you have to kind of grow intimate with the pieces in your home, because especially pieces of wood, I mean, they are living, even though the wood was long ago cut, they're still sort of this like living piece of history in your home, and they will die with you if you're not careful, if you don't actually put the effort in to love them.
No, that's very true. And I think that's a really nice thing to bring your children up with. I think that's lovely. Because you've both got several children, haven't you?
Many children.
I have six.
I have four.
And you one of you had six.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Many children. There's a lot of children. No, this style is really, even if we wanted a different style, we couldn't.
This style suits.
We both have farms. I mean, right now in my kitchen. So I have a terracotta tile in my kitchen floor that we put in. And I have two little lambs in there just walking around. They're bottle lambs. They're orphans. And I'm like, yeah, they're going to poop on the floor and you wipe it up. Like, what does it matter? It's terracotta. Like, you're not going to. That's what they're going to do. That's where they have to be right now. So.
Lovely. Yeah.
It's very lived in, very loved. Okay. I would love it if you could. We have a lot of young homemakers who listen to this and really are just trying to like get their feet underneath them as homemakers. And a lot of them became homemakers through COVID, you know, for one reason or another, they were kind of forced, for lack of a better word, into the home. And all of a sudden they're finding themselves here and they're trying to skill up and they're trying to learn how to kind of fall in love with their home and really get their heart in a place of like, hey, this has value and this is good. And whether you have children or not makes no difference. We always say everybody's a homemaker. If you're cultivating a beautiful space to be, to live, you're a homemaker. But what kind of advice would you have for the young homemaker who is kind of wanting to, you know, spread her wings a little bit when it comes to just creating a home that she does feel comfortable in and that she does love and that she feels comfortable having other people in?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you start, isn't it? I think I would because, you know, my mom was an antique dealer. When I had my first flat in London, she had a couple, you know, she gave me things. Mm-hmm. So I kind of started with a few bits of, they weren't fantastic, but they were perfectly nice, you know, sort of secondhand vintage bits of furniture. It's hard when you start with nothing. I mean, I would always start by just going round thrift stores. Of course you have auctions, don't you? Do you tend to have sort of local auctions where you can pick up secondhand furniture? Because that's quite a big thing here. You know, most towns have a small auction house where people just get rid of things that aren't necessarily terribly valuable, but kind of secondhand bits of furniture. And
maybe our equivalent is like Craigslist.
Well, there are some of the bigger cities. I don't know if like Chicago has auctions, and then there are big local. So we have an Amish community in Indiana.
Right.
And that one is phenomenal. It's called Shipshewana. It's famous. It's incredible. It's just multiple huge barns, and there'll be like a 20 by 20. Just there's hundreds of auctions going on at the same time. It's overwhelming. Yeah. It's phenomenal. But I know the auction here isn't as popular as it is in the UK, but there are towns where it's more of like, it's not as popular. It's just a warehouse and you kind of have to ask antique dealers and find out about that. It's not a common knowledge kind of a thing.
Don't you? And you have...
We have flea markets.
I mean, that is what I think that's how I would start. I would just start looking for things that catch my eye and make me smile, you know. Every room needs a few of those. Obviously, you need your basics. You need something to sit on. You need something to eat off, although you don't, Shay, obviously. For 2 years, you managed without a table.
Yep.
It's a difficult thing to do, but I don't have any rules. If I have a rule, it is just, unless it's going to be incredibly useful and you absolutely need it, don't buy something if you don't really love it. You know, mm-hmm. wait, like you waited. And sometimes just a really beautiful cushion made from, I mean, you could make it yourself, you know, made mm-hmm. from a fabulous bit of fabric that catches your eye. That can be enough to lift a room and make you feel, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, I think mm-hmm. I really love this room.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You don't need to gather it all together at once. You can kind of start slowly and build up mm-hmm. and improve on things and upgrade things. Maybe it's partly a question of having confidence in what you like and not spending too much time, you know, flicking through Instagram and thinking, I wish I lived in that house.
Or right.
kind of mm-hmm. just exploring the things that you find visually exciting. You know, what floats your boat visually? What... Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a kind of learning process, isn't it? And you can learn that by trawling markets and antique shops and secondhand shops and just seeing what the things are that really pull you. Mm-hmm. And maybe there'll be things you can't afford, but you'll be starting to sort of create a visual language for yourself mm-hmm. so that you feel confident when you see something that you like, that you mm-hmm. really like it, that you don't like it because you think you should like it. You don't like it because you think your mum would like it. You don't like it because you think it makes you look clever or in some way impressive. You just like it. Mm-hmm. And then to have the confidence to bring that into your home and not really mind too much what other people think. Because mm-hmm. if it gives you joy, that's enough.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have found so helpful is I'll gather all your books, all of them. And when I'm doing something in a room, let's say I need to redo trim, you know, so a lot of us, you know, if you move into like a newer house, you kind of have this really cheap, nasty, thin trim. And yeah. I think one way to really make a space feel instantly like much better is just to put a nice fat trim on everything. Yeah. So I'll sit down with your books and maybe I'm looking at beds. Maybe I'm looking at bathtubs. Maybe I'm looking at tiles. Maybe I'm looking at light fixtures. And I'll literally just flip through the pages and look yeah. at the light fixture on every yeah. page and like kind of get a running narrative in my mind of what do I like? What yeah. don't I like? What's practical for our space? And, yeah. you know, it's funny you mentioned that starting out. So we're working on a remodel of our basement currently, and we're getting ready to put in a second bathroom. And I'm so insecure because I have also never done a room from scratch. I mean, it's just bare. Quite and scary. It's so scary. I mean, yeah. poor Angela. I'm just like, help me, help me, help me. Well, finally, once I realized I had really worked myself into a knot over this because I really wanted it to have this certain cottagey feel. And I start looking at like William Morris wallpapers. And finally, it was just like, no, that's not, it's going to be too stuffy. Like you need a place that you just love. And that's really, really comfortable, that you're really comfortable in. And once I sort of just,
yeah,
just as long as I love it, who cares? It's my room. I'm not yes. making it for anybody else.
Relax into it. Yes, yes. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's sort of, it's easy to say, just have what you love. But sometimes mm-hmm. I think people don't have enough confidence to know what they love. You know, mm-hmm. I'm lucky because I was brought up with two parents who were pretty visual, and we always went to look at houses, you know, National Trust houses as they are here. And my mum always had an interest in antiques. So I kind of, you know, I grew up with this stuff. So it's almost like second nature to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something I've really been conscious of learning about. Mm-hmm. But I do know from, you know, talking to lots of other people, friends and people who haven't made a career out of doing what I do, that sometimes it is really hard to know what you do like. I think the more you do that, the more you can get a sense of what you like. And the more you try to discount, you know, what other people might think. Mm-hmm. Because it's a terrible mistake to buy things just because you think they'll impress someone. You'll get you'll get really fed up with them and the person won't be impressed. So.
Yeah. Well, and don't you think there's also like this acceptance of where you are and what kind of house you have. There's a lot you can do to manipulate that. But like Angela and I always joke, like my house is never going to be a chateau. It's like a very small little quaint orchard cottage. If I were to bring in this regal design style, it wouldn't make sense. You know, it wouldn't fit. And I think part of it is just looking at what you've been given and saying, I can like another style. I love that style. It's not going to work here.
It's not going to work. No, absolutely. And maybe you can bring in a tiny little bit of it. I mean, if what you love is, you know, French chateau style, you could have one little ormolu sconce. You know, you could probably pop that in a corner somewhere. You can make a gesture towards it. But yeah, you're not going to get the whole high-ceilinged parquet floor.
Right. Yeah.
You've done that, Shay. You have the Trumeau in the kitchen, you know.
Yes.
So you've got a very rustic kitchen with a Trumeau covering the circuit box.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And I've also priced out parquet floor and that's not going anywhere.
This house too. That's not going to work. I love what you're saying about, you know, so many people will say, but I don't know what I like. I'm not there, but it is about reading books, looking at pictures, going to flea markets. You have to train your eye and be constantly exposing yourself to it. And then you do sort of, okay, well, I like that. I don't like that. But if you're sort of living in the dark and not putting yourself in that arena, that's not really going to happen.
Mm-hmm. No. And I mean, to be fair, you know, it's never been easier to look at a lot of images. I mean, we can go online. You can any number of styles. You can look at magazines online. You can look and you can look and you can look. And I think that is how you discover what you like and also what you don't like. Mm-hmm. And then it's a process of experimentation, isn't it? You know, I suspect we all get better at doing it. The more we practice, and we also all make mistakes, and then we try not to make the same mistake again, and then we probably make a different mistake. It's a process, but it's actually a really enjoyable process. It's a lovely process. I think that's the other thing, is just not to get too uptight and worried about it. Just really enjoy it. It's fun. You know, it's lovely. Decorating, it's like sort of, you know, making your nest comfortable and pretty, isn't it? It's a really, really nice thing to do. And I think the less anxious you are about it, the less likely you are to make mistakes in a way. I mean, sure, do your research, you know, look at things, try things out if you can. But in the end, just try and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the design tips that Angela always sort of left me with from many, many years ago when I was learning sort of how to piece this together. And she would always say, look, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So find an image. Listeners, go buy all of Ross's books. Perfect. We should list them all. Find an image and just say, that room speaks to me. I love that. And then mimic it from like paint color. Okay. There's some sort of stonework. How can we bring that in? Okay. There's some sort of old lighting thing. Okay. How can I work that in? And just sort of piece it together in a way that's possible. But you know, not everybody's a designer and not everybody even has the time or the energy to train their eye. So you don't have to. People have done that for you.
It's true. It's very true.
Something that you love and you're interested in, then you're going to enjoy doing it, aren't you? You know, that's the thing. And some people really aren't that bothered, you know, as long as they got a chair to sit on, a telly to watch, a cooker to cook on, they're happy. You know, not everybody is into homemaking. Mm-hmm. But if you are into it, it's a very enjoyable activity, isn't it? I still get a kick from rearranging things on my dresser. I buy another cracked plate and I think, yeah, I'm going to have to find a place for that. And then I have to rearrange everything. And that's like playing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just like a lovely sort of grown-up game that you can play. Rearrange your room, change your cushions. It's fun.
Oh, man.
Well, ironically, Roz, that is the theme of our season, is making it fun again. So every episode this season is just to encourage you. We've had a rough couple years and we just want to encourage everyone to make it fun again. So thank you so much for joining us and encouraging us to just lighten up and make it fun again.
Yeah.
Well, you two make it fun. So
we hope so.
Yeah, no, seriously, this is truly like one of the highlights of my entire career. This is amazing. So we really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. So
lovely.
Thanks for joining us.
Really nice to meet you. And thank you so much for asking me. Very honored.
Yeah.
Very generous to have you. Thank you.
Okay, listeners. Have a great week, and we will be back with you here on Thursday. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.